Welcome to God and Country Biblical Exposition. It's been at least a month since the election, and there is still doubt over the election integrity, at least on the part of those who are doing the investigating. Did Biden win the election, or was there organized fraud? Even saboteurs in the Dominion voting machine company? Well, on today's program, I'd like to cover some of the voter fraud issues. And hold on to your seats, because at the conclusion of this program, I'm going to share some newly revealed, earth-shattering evidence that I hope will begin to convince many of those who are skeptical concerning this election being stolen. But first, a word about this desire on the part of many Trump voters, to see President Trump back in office in order to push back the agenda of the political left. Now, obviously, our concern is for the integrity of this election, regardless of who wins. But the right wants to see Trump back in the White House because he better represents the conservative worldview, Judeo-Christian law. But what if Trump doesn't win? Or if he actually won, but the fraudsters so covered their tracks that Trump cannot prove it in court? What then? Can we visualize God's good plan in allowing the political left to run Washington? The other day, I was listening to a somewhat popular Christian political prophetic pundit, and he was assured that the Spirit of God told him that Donald Trump would have a second term, but it would come with much turmoil. Well, is that the power of wishful thinking, fooling oneself into believing that that is the voice of the Spirit of God, like Ezekiel 13, woe to the foolish prophets who are following their own spirit and have seen nothing? Or is that genuine 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 20, despise not prophetic utterances? For the word of faith constituency, one must believe that Trump will be the next president, otherwise you're not exercising faith, and you will get none of your desire. And if you don't believe 100% that Trump has won the election, then you're not going to be motivated to work to make it so. Well, I don't believe any of those assumptions are true for me. I will work just as hard doing what is right regardless of the outcome. I don't have to know that Trump is going to win to work for Trump's win. My labors are not based upon my outcomes, but faithfulness in doing what's right. God is often pleased for his people to work for righteousness, even when they will never see any of the fruit of this in this life. And I can have 100% faith in God without knowing whether Trump is going to be the next president. I don't even understand why Christians feel that they need to know the future in this regard. James chapter 4, verse 15. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and also do this or that. I mean, I don't see any spiritual necessity that the Christian community must know for sure that Donald Trump will be the next president. That pre-knowledge should have no bearing upon our work or our joy. I know for sure that the Antichrist will rise. I know for sure that there will be an apocalypse. And I know for sure that Jesus is going to return. But even in that, Jesus told his people, it's not for you to know the times or the seasons. That knowledge is not relevant to our walk of faith. But you say, God must tell us who the next president must be. Like, why do some Christians feel the need to know that Trump is going to be the next president? That curiosity might sell many prophetic books. It might popularize many prophetic speakers. But I recommend that you set aside the need to know. Wait upon the Lord. Now, for many Christians, they have this strong sense that Trump will win because they have strong feelings that God's plan is to hold back sin in our nation and preserve our nation for a little while longer. But let's also consider that God's future plan, as the Bible teaches, is a coming apocalypse. Someday, there will be the global rise of moral and political leftism. At some point, we're going to start losing, as far as this world is concerned. Daniel chapter 7, verse 25, the Antichrist will wear down the saints of the highest one. And Revelation chapter 13, all the world will worship the Antichrist, and it was given to him to make war with the saints. In fact, I think we've been losing ground for the last 50 years, but nevertheless, someday America will fully embrace evil, the Antichrist spirit. That's not defeatism, that's prophecy. Now, in regard to the presidency of Donald Trump or any conservative candidate, my prayer has always been the Josiah principle, not in his day. Before judgment fell upon ancient Israel, God gave the Israelites one last righteous king, Josiah. 2 Kings 23:25, before him there was no king like him who turned to the Lord with all of his heart, with all of his soul, and with all of his might, according to all the law of Moses, nor did any like him arise after him. And because Josiah was righteous, God said to Josiah that Israel would not be destroyed in his day. 2 Chronicles 34:28, behold, I will gather you, Josiah, to your fathers, and you shall be gathered to your grave in peace. So your eyes will not see all the evil which I will bring upon this place and on its inhabitants. Why was judgment postponed for Josiah's sake? Because God was not going to let his people, the righteous, own or be identified with the coming collapse of the nation. The righteous would not be at the helm of the ship when the ship goes down. God wanted the destruction of the nation to be identified with the ungodly, an ungodly king, an ungodly administration. So we know someday America is going to go bankrupt. Our government is spending twice what we bring in taxes. There is someday going to be runaway inflation. There's going to be terrible unemployment. And if that's the plan of God for the next few years, I actually want Biden to be in the White House. God may be removing Donald Trump to spare the Christian community from being identified with the coming collapse. Have you ever considered that? So I can accept the will of God in putting Biden in the White House. But let's say the plan of God is for Donald Trump to get a second term because God is going to continue to postpone judgment. But even if Trump wins, consider how wonderful it is that President Trump did not have an immediate, easy victory, that he has instead had to fight for this presidency, and through this, it exposes all of the corruption in our country. What has happened in this election is a godsend. The assault of the left against the president exposes so much evil that the left will cheat and lie. Isaiah 59, justice is far from us, justice is turned back, truth has stumbled in the streets, or Jeremiah 6:13, everyone deals falsely. God is exposing our national apostasy and the ensuing moral corruption. Remember, one of the purposes of the Trump administration is to expose evil in America, and Trump is certainly a catalyst to bring evil out of the woodwork. But let's say Donald Trump wins the election, but he cannot prove it in court. Then in the good providence of God, God wants his people to know that evil gets into power by cheating. If we study the scriptures, we'll discover that the plan of God encompasses way too many variables for any man to comprehend. That's why faith is anticipating the good plan of God, regardless of the immediate political outcomes. Now let's talk about where we are in this case of election fraud. I mean, why cover all of these events? I mean, this is a Bible teaching program. It's not a program, you know, dedicated to giving you details of vote recounts. Well, because in the Old Testament, in the book of the Chronicles and in the Kings, in the telling of the spiritual story, the inspired prophets, gave the details of the battles, gave the details of the changing of administration, because in the details, there are spiritual lessons. So where do we start? There's just so much material here. Well, on Wednesday, Sidney Powell filed a lawsuit against the state of Georgia. That was the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. By the way, the leftist news media, they framed the story, ABC News. Former Trump lawyer Sidney Powell still pushing conspiracy-filled election lawsuits. Experts say the suits, though long shots, are doing real damage. Well, if the media was unbiased, the headlines would be something like Trump moves closer to exposing fraud in the election. Well, remember Sidney Powell is that lawyer who's going after the fraud at the Dominion voting machine level, whereas the Trump team of lawyers, Giuliani and Ellis, are going after ballot fraud at the local level. So here's the headlines from Fox News. Quote, the lawsuit, which names Georgia Governor Brian Kemp and Secretary of State and Chair of Georgia's State Election Board, Brad Raffensperger, among the defendants, alleges multiple constitutional violations, citing fact witnesses, expert witnesses, and statistical impossibilities within the election results, and says tens of thousands of votes were impacted, enough to sway the state in favor of projected President-elect Joe Biden. The scheme and the artifice to defraud was for the purpose of illegally and fraudulently manipulating the vote count to make certain the election of Joe Biden as President of the United States. The lawsuit alleges software and hardware produced by Dominion Voting Systems Corporation is where the massive fraud began, stating the design and features of the system software do not allow for a simple audit of misallocation, redistribution, and deletion of votes. There is incontrovertible physical evidence that security systems were breached and that voting machines were connected to the internet, a violation of state and federal law, according to the filing. Georgia purchased Dominion voting machines and software in July of 2019. At the time, state Democrats led by former gubernatorial candidate Stacey Abrams argued the machines were susceptible to tampering. The state of Texas a year earlier rejected the system due to its vulnerabilities to undetected manipulations. A Dominion spokesperson earlier this week told Fox News that Powell's claims are without merit, unquote Fox News. Now, although Powell is filing this suit in Georgia, remember this applies to the other battleground states because, amazingly, in this election, both Michigan and Pennsylvania and also Arizona and Georgia switched to the Dominion voting system. Congress allocated $425 million to help states switch to this ballot marking system and these devices. I believe about 28 states now use Dominion machines. And again, remember, Dominion machines were rejected by Texas. Now, of course, Dominion responded to Powell's suit, quote, Sidney Powell released what appears to be a very rough draft of a lawsuit against the Republican governor and the Secretary of State of Georgia alleging a bizarre election fraud conspiracy that, were possible, would necessarily require the collaboration of thousands of participants, including state office holders, bipartisan local election officials, thousands of volunteer election day poll watchers in thousands of locations across the state of Georgia, federal and state government technology testing agencies, private election service companies, and independent third-party auditors. This quite simply did not occur. Dominion Voting Systems is the gold standard for transparent and accountable voting equipment. The allegations included in the draft complaint are baseless, senseless, physically impossible, and unsupported by any evidence whatsoever. We stand with state and local elected officials and bipartisan election volunteers that this suit maliciously maligns every vote from a Dominion device in Georgia is documented in an audible paper trail and creates a verifiable paper ballot available for hand counting. In fact, the Georgia hand counts, independent audits, and machine tests have all repeatedly affirmed that the machine counts were accurate. Also from the Hill, Dominion spokesperson, it is not physically possible for our machines to switch votes from one candidate to another. When a voter votes on a Dominion machine, they fill out their ballot on the touchscreen. They are given a printed copy, which they then give to a local election official for safekeeping. So therefore, Dominion claims its system is tamper-proof because there is an actual paper ballot printed by the voting machine to verify the machine tabulation. Well, really? We will see how tamper-proof these machines really are in a moment. But in reading these mainstream news sites, the public comes away believing that Powell and her team are a bunch of crackpots. I mean, how can there be cheating when these machines print out a paper ballot to verify the totals? And the mail-in ballots were scanned into the machine and they're still available and can be rescanned again. Even the Christian periodical World Magazine put out a piece calling into question Powell and Giuliani's accusation of voter fraud. The article is entitled, Ensuring an Accurate Vote. Dominion voting systems and other election softwares have vulnerability, but layers of security guard against widespread fraud. And then World Magazine calls into question Breitbart, One American News Network, Eric Metaxas, and Trump allies for, quote, pushing claims of massive fraud at Dominion. But these Christians at World Magazine, or any other source that doubt fraud, should not be so trusting, so gullible. What is overlooked is that the head of Dominion, the head of strategy and security, Eric Coomer, stated that they were going to make sure that Trump lost. And Coomer is a computer genius with a PhD in physics and computer science, and he has many software patents, and he is not going to leave a trail that is easy to find. We're not talking about amateurs here. Even with printed ballots, there are still sophisticated ways to cheat. The New York Review, December 17th, 2019. How New Voting Machines Could Hack Our Democracy by Jennifer Kahn. Congress appears poised to fund another generation of risky touchscreen voter machines called Universal Use Ballot Marking Devices, or BMDs, which function as electronic pens, making your selection on paper on your behalf. Although vendors, election officials, and others often refer to this paper as a paper ballot, it differs from traditional hand-marked paper ballots in that it is marked by a machine, which can be hacked without detection in a manual recount or audit. These pricey and unnecessary systems are sold by opaquely financed vendors who use donations and other gifts to entice election officials to buy them. Most leading election security experts instead recommend hand-marked paper ballots as a primary voting system. These experts include Professor Richard DeMillo of Georgia Tech, Professor Andrew Appel of Princeton University, Professor Philip Stark of the University of California at Berkeley, Professor Duncan Buell at the University of South Carolina, Professor Alex Halderman at the University of Michigan, and Harry Hertzti, who is considered one of the world's foremost experts on the topic of electronic voting security and is famously known for his successful attempts to demonstrate how the Diebold election system voting machines could be hacked. These scholars warn that even a robust manual audit, known as a risk-limiting audit, cannot detect whether a BMD marked paper ballot has been hacked. And Andrew Appel, mentioned in this piece, has done extensive work on voter technology. He has posted a number of blog articles at Freedom to Tinker, they're entitled 10 Ways to Make Voting Machines Cheat with Plausible Deniability. And this article, Design Flaws in Dominion Voting Machines, and an article, Cheating with Paper Ballots, and this article, Ballot Marking Devices Cannot Ensure the Will of the Voters, and Why Voters Should Mark Ballots by Hand, and an article entitled, Ballot Marking Machines Are Not Meaningfully Auditable. So, of course, I don't have time to explain all of Appel's findings, but they're really quite convincing. Even with a computer-printed paper ballot, the software can be designed to cheat. For example, Appel writes this. A now standard principle of computer-counted public elections is use a voter-verified paper ballot so that in case the voting machines cheat in counting the votes, the human doing the audit or recount can see the paper that the voter marked. Why would the voting machine cheat? Well, they're computers. And any computer may have security vulnerabilities that permit an attacker to modify or replace its software. We must presume that any voting machine might at any time be under the complete control of an attacker and election thief. Any voting machine whose physical hardware can print votes onto the ballot after the last time the voter sees the paper is not a vote verified paper ballot system and is not acceptable. The best way to implement this principle is to physically separate the ballot marking device from the scanning and the tabulating device. The voter marks the paper ballot with a pen. Then after inspecting the paper ballot, the voter inserts the ballot into an optical scanner that is not physically capable of printing ballots. So, Professor Andrew Appel, a voter integrity expert, contradicts the boastful security claims of Dominion. And any reasonable person can see that Appel's case completely dismantles the claims of Dominion. Now, one of the points Cindy Powell is making in her lawsuit is that this election should not be certified, not merely because there is fraud, but because Dominion voting machines cannot be audited. Fraud cannot be easily found, even if you're looking for it. The envelopes that were signed by mail-in voters have all been thrown out, and there's no way to verify that the machine printed out and tabulated the will of the voters. So at the very least, this whole endeavor on the part of Congress and on the part of the states to spend billions to switch to ballot marking machines has just been one big disaster. These states and government agencies were warned beforehand that there was no security in these new systems. They cannot be audited, and they're in for trouble ahead if the election is ever questioned. Here's an article. Officials raised concern for years about the security of U.S. voting machine software systems. So, we might be wondering whether Cindy Powell is going to have any success with her lawsuit. Well, she now has on our team one of America's most leading cybersecurity experts, a Dr. Navid Keshavarz Nia, a man who the New York Times touted as one of the nation's leading cybersecurity experts. In his 9-page affidavit, part of Powell's lawsuit in Georgia, Navid states, I have advanced training from the Defense Intelligence Agency, DIA, the Central Intelligence Agency, the CIA, National Security Agency, the DHS, Office of Intelligence and Analysis, and the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. My experience spans 35 years of performing technical assessment, mathematical modeling, cyber attack patterns, analysis, and security intelligence. I conclude with the highest confidence that the election 2020 data were altered in all battleground states, resulting in hundreds of thousands of votes that were cast for President Trump to be transferred to Vice President Biden. These alterations were the result of systemic and widespread exploitable vulnerabilities in Dominion voting systems, SCIDL software, and Smartmatic systems that enabled operators to achieve the desired results. In my view, the evidence is overwhelming and incontrovertible, And some of Navid's findings are, hammer and scorecard are real, not a hoax, as the Democrats allege. And both are used, both software are used to manipulate election outcomes. Dominion, Skydon, and Smartmatic are all vulnerable to fraud and voter manipulation. And mainstream media reports on these vulnerabilities have been given in the past. Dominion has been used in other countries to forge election results. Dominion corporate structure is deliberately confusing to hide relationships with Venezuela, China, and Cuba. Dominion machines are easily hackable. Dominion memory cards with cryptographic key access to their systems were stolen in 2019. The counts in the disputed states, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, Arizona, Nevada, and Georgia, show electronic manipulation. The simultaneous decision in Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Arizona, Nevada, and Georgia to pretend to halt counting votes was unprecedented and demonstrated a coordinated effort to collude toward desired results. He also writes, 1 or 2% of votes were forged in Biden's favor. Optical scanners were set to accept unverified, unvalidated ballots. The scanners failed to keep records for audits, an outcome that must have been deliberately programmed. The stolen cryptographic key, which applies to all voting systems, was used to alter vote counts. The favorable votes poured in after hours for Biden could not be accounted for by a Democrat preference for mail-in ballots. They demonstrated manipulation. For example, in Pennsylvania, it was physically impossible to feed 400,000 ballots into the machine within 2 or 3 hours. So in reference to all of this new testimony, the American Spectator put out a piece on Monday entitled, "The Legitimacy of Biden's Win is Being Buried by Objective Data. Emerging information from the states render his victory less and less plausible." And that's an honest headline. Here are some more positive pieces of news. The Trump campaign filed a lawsuit in Wisconsin claiming abuse of absentee voting affected 220,000 ballots. The campaign alleges tens of thousands of votes were cast well outside the bounds of Wisconsin law. And this is a big problem for Wisconsin because the Board of Elections broke state law in giving out mail-in ballots without the voters requesting those mail-in ballots, which is against state law. Also, other news, in Georgia, after going back and forth, the Powell team got the state of Georgia to impound some voting machines right before state officials were going to race the data on the machine, which is a whole other story. And also, the Georgia Secretary of State has opened up 250 investigations into credible claims of illegal voting. And now the big news. On Tuesday of this week, the conservative pro-life group, the Thomas More Foundation, the Legal Society, held a press conference exposing the fraud that they had uncovered. The Thomas More Society knew that there would be cheating in this upcoming election. And so for 18 months, they set up a fraud investigation group called the Amistad Project. And this was named after all of the lies and the shams in that 1839 Amistad court case. Now, I want us to notice in this, the providence of God in raising up these Christians, this Christian group, the Thomas More Legal Society, to fight for the truth. And the man who was leading this press conference even teaches law at the Liberty University School of Law. Now, before I share this with you, what they uncovered, I want to set the stage by sharing what happened earlier in the day. Bill Barr, the head of the Department of Justice, announced that the DOJ has found no evidence of significant fraud in this election. This announcement from Barr to the AP press was really a big hit against the Trump administration and their battle to expose this election fraud. Bill Barr said to the AP press, "The U.S. attorneys and the FBI agents have been following any lead pertaining to voter fraud only to come up empty-handed." Empty-handed. To date, we have not seen fraud on a scale that could affect a different outcome in the election. There's been one assertion that would be systemic fraud, and that would be the claim that machines were programmed essentially to skew the election results. The Department of Homeland Security and the Department of Justice have looked into that, and so far, we haven't seen anything to substantiate that. And then Bill Barr said, there is a growing tendency to use the criminal justice system as a sort of default fix-all. And when people don't like something, they want the Department of Justice to come in and investigate. So I'm sure you see the problem here. Barr is complaining that people want the DOJ to come in and investigate fraud. Well, what's the Department of Justice for in the first place? And Barr is saying that there is no evidence of fraud when he hasn't even opened a formal criminal investigation. And that's exactly the response of the Trump legal team. How can Barr say that there is no fraud when he hasn't even opened a case yet? I mean, the DOJ last year opened an entire case for months over the Russian collusion hoax with far less evidence. So like many in government and in the public, there is this a priori belief in the goodness of the system and political actors, not the Psalm 116, all men are liars, or Romans chapter 3, with their tongues they keep deceiving. Liberalism, even in the Republican Party, is built on this error of assuming the goodness of man. So Barr says there is no evidence of voter fraud. Then private individuals, the Thomas More Society, finds the evidence. They find the smoking gun that even the DOJ, the FBI, and the CIA were unable or unwilling to find. Now, in this press conference, the Thomas More lawyers presented testimonies from individuals who saw corruptions in ballot counting, clear violations of the law. But it was the testimony of a trucker who trucks for the United Postal Service, who revealed the most damning evidence. We now know the origin of all of these mysterious, questionable ballots in Pennsylvania that showed up in the middle of the night. The trail of corruption is being exposed. Now, I want to play for you this man's testimony. It's going to take some time, but you need to hear it for yourself, and we need to get this out there because the media is burying the story. So here's the clip, and you'll notice that the sound and the filming is absolutely awful. But that's just another example of how amateurs have to do the work that the professionals refuse to do. So here's the clip.
Jesse runs a mail route for his employer, Tin Roads Express. And from the end of September through October 21st, when this incident occurred, it's pretty routine. The post office likes routine. I mean, that's efficient. People show up at a certain time, they arrive, they dock, they unload, they load, they get to the next station at a specific time. And the post office keeps track of this all of the time. Jesse, I'll ask him to describe, because I might not describe it fully or correctly, but when he backs up to a dock, for example, for his trailer to be unloaded, well, let me back up. As he first pulls into some postal facilities, he shows his identity. It's a badge. And he receives a slip wherever he goes that identifies who he is and basically indicates what's on that truck, what's part of the load, that he's been there. He backs up to the dock, and an expediter will come out, and they will use a scanner, and they scan. I'm going to forget all the things they scan. There's a dock scan, right? There's a dock scan, and he's going to do this much better than I am. I'm sorry, buddy. And then they also are going to scan a metal seal that is put on the back of that trailer that can't be opened unless you tear the seal. So they know nobody has been in to steal from that load or alter that load. It has a barcode on it. They will scan that. And then each of the pallets sometimes has data that they scan. So they're keeping track of all of this. Moreover, Jesse's driving a truck that has GPS that he can only drive when he signs in on an electronic board that keeps track of wherever he goes. There's also identification on the trailer, so that they can specifically identify the trailer. Now, Jesse, during this time, by the way, that he's running this route we're going to be speaking about is using the same trailer. You love that trailer, right? It was a good trailer. It was a good trailer. It had suspension, right? He describes it better than I, but, you know, it kept good traction on the road. You can handle in water. It had some kind of lift on it. I don't understand. I have trouble changing the oil. I'm sorry, Jesse. I'm bad at this. He loved that trailer. It worked for him. He'd driven other trailers, and they were worse trailers than that one. So he had trailer 10R1440 all the time on that route. Now, Jesse would roll out of bed. He'd go and pick up his tractor, which was parked in the Auto One parking lot, which is a car dealership there in Lancaster. He'd do all of his checks. He'd get in his truck. He'd sign in, and then he'd roll over to the Lancaster post office, where he'd back up to pretty much the same dock, maybe another dock. And they would load him up, or did they already have you loaded? They loaded you? Already loaded, or in process. He'd hook up his tractor. They'd get done with it. He'd check his load, because one time he didn't, and it shifted, and he jackknifed on the road. It was a scary, scary event. And so he always checked his load. He'd walk in there, make sure it's balanced. They'd shut it, they'd slap on the seal, they'd do all their scanning, and Jesse's on the road from Lancaster, Pennsylvania to Bethpage, New York. And he loved driving into New York, especially that time of day, early morning hours. He'd leave, he'd roll out about 1 a.m., he'd get up to Bethpage, 4 or so, 4:20, beautiful, seeing the city without all the traffic. He'd pull into Bethpage, back up to the same dock. The expediters are there. They have some small chat, but really weren't friends. Jesse stayed on his job. He was polite. Jesse, not political. He'll tell you, he didn't vote for either one. Doesn't follow the news much. So he's up there, and they're loading up these ballots. He didn't even notice this time on October 21st. He didn't notice at first that it was ballots. Didn't think much of it. And he'll tell you about that, and then I'll come back to that. But his route's always the same. Then he gets loaded up, and he comes back to Harrisburg. Now, I want to explain something to you. Where's that? And you guys will understand this. This is not his truck. But generally, he's hauling from Bethpage what will go to Lancaster and Harrisburg. But his route takes him to Harrisburg first, which means you have to load Lancaster up there in the back of the trailer, the nose of the trailer. Yeah. They would load Lancaster first and then Harrisburg. So when he arrived in Harrisburg, Harrisburg could be taken off and the Lancaster load was there. And then he would drive to Lancaster. You can imagine the confusion and the delay that would be caused if Jesse decided he wasn't going to Harrisburg first, but he went to Lancaster. Then they would have to take off the Harrisburg load, then get the Lancaster load, then reload Harrisburg to have him drive to Harrisburg. So the post office has got this down. Despite all the complaints, they have all the loading and the logistics and the systems to run efficiently. So his typical day is that he goes down from Bethpage to Harrisburg. He unloads, pulls up to the dock, they unload. And then he's off to Lancaster, he unloads, he unhooks his trailer, he leaves his trailer there, he's going to pick it up the next day, drives back to Auto One, and then gets back home. Same way every time till October 21st. Now I want to share with you, the first time I met Jesse, I went up to his home. I'd heard about his story, and Colonel Schaefer was with me. And I did what might be considered a forensic interview. It's conducted in such a way to assess the veracity of the person that you're speaking with. And generally what you do is you begin with questions that set the scene in which the witness has confidence, so that they gain their confidence. You let them know they're in control, they can stop the conversation anytime that they want, they can kick me out of the house. We had a video camera and he could stop the video. He could refuse to answer any question. He could ask me any question that he wanted. So I had Jesse set the scene. During the scene setting, he mentioned something to me. It was an offhand comment. He was telling me about his jobs, and he said, and there was a time there that I had some difficulty. And then he went on setting the scene. I knew what he was referring to, but he did not know what I knew. Jesse did not know what I knew about his background. So I let him continue setting the scene, and then I had him describe what happened. And all of it, by the way, is credible and matches up with the tangible evidence, how the post office works, and so forth. And so, as he was going through, and when he was getting done with telling me what happened, I said, Jesse, why don't you tell me about that little difficulty that you had? And he said, what do you mean? I said, about your past. He said, what do you want to know? I said, the truth. And Jesse revealed to me that he had been a drug addict, that he'd been arrested, that he served some time, that for a while in his life he wanted to do things his way, that he violated probation, that he went back up, and that when he saw his first daughter born, he decided to turn around his life. And he's been sober since then. I said, you know this is going to come down on your head. If you step forward, this is going to come down on your head. There will be people who aren't concerned about what you saw. They will be more concerned about trying to destroy you because they don't like what you saw. And I asked him if he had told his three daughters that their father had been in prison. And he said he hadn't. They didn't know. Now they will. Now they will. This man is telling the truth. You can confirm the truth. We have a responsibility to get to the answers of the questions raised by what he saw. And if this nation continues in destroying individuals rather than listening to what they have to say, I don't know if we can make ourselves out of this wilderness that we've created. I truly ask you to listen to what this man says, because he is a truth teller. Jesse?
Thanks, Phil. Tell you what. First time I met him, I was like, this dude's pretty cool. And then afterwards, I was like, this dude's an asshole. I'm going to tell you how I see it, and I'm a pretty straight shooter, all right? I'm sorry if I swore, I don't know if I'm allowed to or not, but I'm a truck driver, so be prepared, all right? Got me reading papers, and I don't like reading, I'm going to be honest with you, okay? I didn't want to come. I tell you what, I have everything to lose, nothing to gain from this, all right? Everything to lose, nothing to gain. And I'm already losing. I'm already losing, okay? So for me to come here, it was a big step. And for me to come here, it was just more so I had to put myself to the side and have to worry about everyone else. Because I believe everyone else in America should know, all right? Just a little pass. He kind of gave you a little rundown. Yeah, served some time. Had some charges. You guys want to run with it, you can run with it. But this is what the real story is. The story is what we're here for today, all right? I didn't want this put on me. But for some reason, it's on me. And here I am, all right? I drive tractor trailer for U.S. Postal Service subcontractor. I drive a route transporting mail from Lancaster, Pennsylvania to Bethpage, New York to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania and back to Lancaster. On October 21st, when I arrived for my usual route in Bethpage, New York and expediter made three references to ballots that were to be loaded into my trailer, including saying, hey, you've got a ballot today, or you have ballots today, and even showing me a piece of registered mail and saying someone really wanted their ballot to count. In total, I saw 24 Gaylords. Where's that, Buff? Right here. You got this guy right here. That's kind of a good representation of a Gaylord, all right? They're not usually put together with duct tape, though. Here you go. This is pretty good, too. But for a visual, I mean, that will work, all right? So, in total, I saw 24 Gaylords, or large cardboard containers of ballots loaded into my trailer. These Gaylords contain plastic trays, I call them totes, but trays will work, of ballots stacked on top of each other. All the envelopes were the same size. I could see the envelopes had handwritten addresses, return addresses, and I could even tell that one was marked registered mail. That one was off to the side, all right? They were complete ballots. I didn't think much of it at the time. At Bethpage, I was first loaded with two tall Gaylords. So picture that thing there, or this little representation here, but this tall, all right? So I was loaded with two tall Gaylords, okay? And that had mixed mail pieces bound for Lancaster. These Gaylords were loaded first because they would be the last off my trailer. The remainder of the truck was loaded with complete ballots bounded for Harrisburg. I then drove to Harrisburg with the ballots. Usually, I offload in one of the seven docks every day, but not on October 21st. I wasn't allowed to offload. That's different. Whenever I pull into Harrisburg, I go around and I get unloaded, and then I roll out. Not that day, right? Not that day. Instead, I was made to wait for roughly 6 hours in the yard, from 9:15 a.m. to 3 p.m. This really ticked me off, all right? Because my brother was in town. He just moved back up, and I wanted to spend some time with him. I tried to get the attention of postal workers, but no one would tell me what's going on. All of this was weird. I arrived at about the same time every day. The expediter scans all my seals and barcodes, and they unload me. But from the time I first arrived in Harrisburg from Bethpage, everything got weird. None of that happened. After waiting 6 hours, I went inside to figure out what's going on. I was told to wait for the transportation supervisor. This was also weird. 16 months I've been doing this. I haven't ever talked to the transportation supervisor for United States Postal Service. I talk to an expediter. I come in, I see an expediter, that's who I deal with. If I have an issue, it's the expediter. I don't deal with anyone else but the expediter. I never, never talk to the United States Postal Service's transportation supervisor. Let's make that clear. I have my own transportation supervisor for the company that I work for. He's the one that gives me the details. He's the one that I listen to. I don't listen to this guy. He's the guy that would contact my boss if he needs something ran different. I've never spoken with this transportation supervisor from the United States Postal Service. They don't speak to people like me. He's a top guy. He's the kind of guy that would speak to my boss, not a trucker like me. The supervisor told me to drive to Lancaster without being unloaded in Harrisburg. This made no sense to me. I knew the ballots were loaded for for Harrisburg. And that if I was to go to Lancaster, they would have to off unload my those pallets in Lancaster to take off Lancaster stuff, to put the ballots back on the trailer, to send them back to Harrisburg. Doesn't make no sense. This was a real screw up in my thinking. I wanted my ticket. So whenever I go to a place, whenever I'll leave, I'll get a ticket. I'll get a ticket, a slip, whatever you want to call it. It's the date, time that I'm supposed to be there. It'll have my trailer number on it. It'll have how much I'm loaded. It'll have the seal number. It has my name. It'll have who was the expediter. So I wanted my ticket, my slip. I call them tickets. Some people call them slips, okay? And then because I was there for 6 hours, I wanted my late slip too, because I wanted to be paid for sitting in that yard for 6 hours. So I wanted the ticket and the late slip for stopping at Harrisburg. Also, I wanted it because if they're telling me to take this load to Lancaster, I don't want to pull up the Lancaster of Harrisburg crap and be like, yeah, they just told me to be or come here and not have no ticket, because then it'll look like I just came straight here, you know? Just to prove that I was there. And so others would know I wasn't the person that screwed this up. A ticket is always provided to a driver when they arrive at a United States Postal Service facility that proves you were there. The transportation supervisor refused to give me a ticket and told me to leave. I then demanded he give me a late slip, since I wanted to get paid for the time I was sitting there and waiting for them to offload me. He refused to give me that too. He was kind of rude and wouldn't explain anything to me. He just told me to go to Lancaster. I then drove to Lancaster, unhooked my trailer in its normal place, and then drove my truck to where I always park it, in a nearby lot, and then I went home. The next day, it just got weirder. As I arrived at Lancaster's United States Postal Service facility, with my tractor, I went to hook up to my trailer, and my trailer was gone, not there no more. 10R 1440. Since I started driving that Bethpage route, I've always had a trailer, 10R 1440. I like that trailer. It was a nice trailer. I know you guys probably don't really know nothing about truck driving or trailers or anything, but the rear tandems, if you're driving light, the rear tandems will actually, the front axle will actually go up. Nice air ride. The doors on it, it worked great. Some of the trailers that place has, you could honestly put it on the back of a carrier and drop it off in the middle of the ocean and no one would worry about it. So that trailer I really liked, okay? What happened on October 21st was a series of unusual events that cannot be a coincidence. I know I saw ballots with return addresses filled out. Thousands of them. Thousands. Loaded onto my trailer in New York and headed for Pennsylvania. At first, I didn't think it was a big deal. In fact, I thought it was really awesome. I really did. I was like, sweet, I'm doing something for the presidential race. You know, this is cool. But as things became weirder, I got to thinking and wondered why I was driving complete ballots from New York to Pennsylvania. I didn't know I didn't know why, so I decided to speak up. And that's what I'm doing today. Thank you.
Now, did you catch all this? PA mail-in ballots would not be coming from New York State. And certainly not in those numbers on a single day, October 21st. For those containers to be filled, it is calculated that there must have been 200,000 to 250,000 fake ballots in those crates. The clear indication here is that these ballots were created in some ballot copying operation to be hidden somewhere in a trailer and then brought to the counting centers on the night of the election. That is if Trump started to take the lead. And that's exactly what happened on election night. And maybe this is how Dominion's Eric Coomer was able to ensure Antifa that we made effing sure that Trump cannot win. It may not have anything to do with software manipulation. Instead, Coomer might have known that fake ballots were being printed in battleground states. Or maybe it was both physical and computer fraud. The Thomas More Society has turned over this information to law enforcement. The FBI has the capacity to get warrants, to question these postal supervisors, to find this fake ballot creation operation. Will there be enough honest people at the FBI to do this? Well, let's just hope and pray. But again, let's remember the statement made earlier in the day by Bill Barr that the DOJ had found no evidence of fraud. Now, I don't believe Bill Barr is a deep state plant. It's just that in his naivete, he wasn't looking very hard. And then on Sunday, Chris Krebs, the former director of U.S. cybersecurity, was interviewed by 60 Minutes. I mean, Krebs was the man who said that the 2020 election was the most secure election in American history. And of course, 60 Minutes interviewed him to help establish that narrative that Biden's going to be the next president. Krebs told 60 Minutes that the president's allegations of election fraud are false. And then Krebs went on to praise the Dominion voting machines as being foolproof. It was really proper for Trump to fire this man on the spot because he came up with these biased conclusions without any investigations into possible fraud. Now, with the testimony from the Amistad Project, Krebs is proven wrong. So by way of conclusion, more and more stories keep coming out proving election fraud. Sidney Powell was right. It's like a fire hose of evidence. But the bottom line is this. This whole case is going to be one big headache for the courts and the Democratic Party. President Trump, in his tactful style, tweeted out over the Thanksgiving Day weekend, "Biden can only enter the White House as president if he can prove that his ridiculous 80 million votes were not fraudulently or illegally attained." When you see what has happened in Detroit, Atlanta, Philadelphia, and Milwaukee, master voter fraud, he has got a big, unsolvable problem. I believe in the next few months, the story might flip from, is Trump going to concede, to, when is Biden going to concede? And this is certainly a 1 Kings chapter 12, verse 15 moment. It's a turning of events from the Lord. Or from the book of Esther, Haman believes he is going to be honored, but instead Haman is humiliated by having to honor Mordecai, and Haman hangs on the gallows that he built for Mordecai. The irony is absolutely amazing because God wants mankind to recognize that the Most High is ruler over the realm of mankind. And he bestows it on whomever he wishes, Daniel chapter 4, verse 25, and Proverbs 21, 30. There is no wisdom and no understanding and no counsel against the Lord. Thank you for including God and country as part of your discipleship in the Word. Don't forget to like, to share, to subscribe, to comment below, and may Jesus Christ reign.